Imagine a hacker breaches the network of like a Fortune 500 bank.
Right.
You know, they bypass the firewall, they bypass the endpoint detection, and they are officially inside the perimeter. 10 years ago, that was just, well, game over.
Oh, absolutely. Total game over.
Right. But today they get in, they look around, and they realize they're completely trapped. I mean, they can't move laterally, they can't access funds, they can't actually do anything of value. Why? Because they don't have the master keys. Welcome to the deep dive.
It really is a completely different threat landscape now. The perimeter is basically just assumed to be compromised.
Yeah.
So the entire security posture, it relies entirely on what happens after the attacker is already, inside the house.
Which is exactly our mission today for you listening. We are pulling apart a very specific, highly detailed 2026 career and industry guide on CyberArk operations in India.
Right?
CyberArk is essentially the heavyweight champion in what's known as privilege access management, or PAM,
Yeah.
VAM. Our goal here is to figure out why protecting these specific master keys has become one of the most lucrative, like mission-critical career paths in the tech sector, and how the whole architecture of trust has entirely shifted.
To get to the bottom of that, you really have to look at the anatomy of a modern breach. I mean, attackers are incredibly efficient now.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to break into a database by brute force anymore. They want to find the administrator credentials, the service accounts, the IT super user logins, and literally just walk through the front door.
Right, because why break a window when you have the key?
Exactly. If an attacker gets a standard user's password, well, they can read some emails. But if they get a privileged account password, they can deploy ransomware across 10,000 servers in like 4 seconds.
Okay, let's unpack this shift. Because we are moving from a model where we tried to keep everyone out to a model where we assume everyone is already in. And the guy anchors this entire hiring boom around the concept of zero trust.
Yeah, zero trust. That's the foundational philosophy driving all of this right now. The core tenet is never trust, always verify.
Always verify.
Right. Historically, if your laptop was connected to the corporate Wi-Fi, the network assumed you were an employee and just trusted you. It was a very flat network.
But zero trust throws that out, right?
It completely throws it out. It assumes the network is always hostile.
So, wait, even if I'm sitting at my desk in the corporate headquarters using a company-issued laptop, the system still looks at me like I'm a potential threat.
Well, it looks at your request as a potential threat. Every single time you try to access a resource, the system demands verification.
Wow.
And when it comes to administrative accounts, the people who actually have the power to alter the system itself, that verification has to be absolute.
Yeah.
That is where privileged access management becomes the bedrock of the enterprise.
I was trying to visualize this architectural shift while I was reading the sources, and the best way I can picture the old security model is like a castle with a moat. You pull up the drawbridge, you put archers on the walls, and you keep the bad guys out. But if an attacker swims the moat and gets over the wall, they can pretty much run wild inside the courtyard.
The interior is completely soft. Yeah, once you're past the firewall, you have free rein.
Right. But zero trust, and specifically what CyberArk does, it feels much more like a modern luxury hotel.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you manage to sneak past the front door or the lobby security guard. If you don't have a very specific, heavily encrypted master key card, you can't get into the penthouse or like the electrical room.
Let's actually take that analogy a step further,
Yeah.
because it perfectly maps to the actual CyberArk tool set that the guide discusses.
Okay, go for it.
In that luxury hotel, you don't just hand a master key card to a maintenance worker and say, keep this in your pocket.
No, you'd lock it up somewhere.
Exactly. You'd lock it in a secure room. That's the CyberArk vault. The vault is this heavily fortified, isolated digital safe where the privileged credentials actually live. The human administrators don't even know the passwords to the servers they manage.
Wait, really? The IT admin doesn't even know the password to the server they're fixing.
Not if the architecture is designed correctly, no. When an admin needs to access a server, they log into CyberArk. CyberArk retrieves the credential from the vault, and then a component called the Privilege Session Manager, or PSM, actually brokers the connection.
So the PSM is doing the heavy lifting there.
Right. The admin gets a screen showing the server, but CyberArk is sitting in the middle, injecting the password behind the scenes.
That is brilliant. So the password is never actually exposed to the human, which means it can't be stolen from like a sticky note on their desk or intercepted on their laptop.
Exactly. And the PSM acts like a security camera in your luxury hotel elevator. It monitors and records the entire session. Every keystroke, every mouse click is log.
Oh.
Yeah. So if an incident happens, you have a complete tamper-proof audit trail of exactly what that privileged account did.
The guide also mentions something called the Central Policy Manager, the CPM, and Privileged Threat Analytics, PTA.
Right. So the CPM is basically your automated lock changer. It automatically rotates those passwords in the vault based on corporate policy, maybe every 30 days, maybe after every single use.
That's convenient.
Very. And PTA is your real-time security guard. If someone suddenly tries to use a master key card to access the electrical room at 3 a.m. on a Sunday, the PTA flags that behavior as anomalous and can just automatically terminate the session.
Because building and managing that level of granular, continuous security requires, you know, an army of specialists. It perfectly explains the massive global hiring boom we're seeing in the source material.
It absolutely does.
And what's fascinating is where this work is physically happening. The guide points to an absolute explosion of CyberArk roles across India in 2026.
The geopolitical and economic shifts driving this are huge.
Yeah.
Multinational banks, global healthcare conglomerates, massive tech firms, they're all rapidly expanding their global capability centers, their GCCs, across India.
Yeah, we're talking about key hubs like Bengaluru, Pune, the NCR region. And the guide specifically highlights Hyderabad as this massive growth center for cybersecurity delivery.
Hyderabad is huge right now, yeah.
But I want to be really clear about what's actually happening in these GCCs, because I feel like when people hear global delivery center, there's this lingering stereotype that this is just outsourced lower-level IT support.
We have to dismantle that misconception entirely right now. These are not password reset desks answering tickets from someone who's, you know, locked out of their email.
Right.
You cannot outsource your core existential security risk to a low-level operation. The roles being hired in these GCCs and through specialized managed security service providers, MSSPs, they are deeply architectural.
The industries doing the hiring, like BFSI, which is banking, financial services, and insurance, that they aren't hiring help desk workers. They're bringing in big four consultancies and top-tier MSSPs to design the intricate security architecture that literally stops a global bank from being compromised.
The compliance landscape actually dictates this. The Reserve Bank of India, the RBI, they have incredibly strict cybersecurity guidelines.
Right, and GDPR in Europe.
Exactly. Companies are legally mandated to prove they have total control over who is accessing their critical infrastructure. So if a bank in London is using a GCC in Hyderabad to manage its global server fleet, the professionals in Hyderabad are the ones holding the keys to the kingdom.
That is a massive responsibility.
The responsibility level is exponentially higher than traditional IT.
So let's look at the actual career trajectory. If you are one of the people listening to this and you want to build this architecture, what does your day-to-day actually look like? Because the guide breaks this down into very distinct stages, right? Starting with the administrator role.
Yeah, the administrator is where most professionals cut their teeth. You're primarily focused on the operational side of the platform. You are managing the vault, onboarding new privileged accounts, troubleshooting when a connection via the PSM fails.
Just keeping the lights on, basically.
Yeah, keeping the lights on, ensuring the password rotation policies are firing correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You're making sure the digital hotel is functioning.
Okay, got it.
That's the baseline, yes. But the real complexity comes in when you move up to the engineer role. This is where you transition from operating the platform to deploying and integrating it. An engineer is figuring out how to connect CyberArk to the company's existing infrastructure. And crucially, they are heavily focused on automation.
See, this brings up a point in the guide that I really wanted to push you on.
Okay.
The required skills section lists PowerShell and REST APIs as basically non-negotiable for engineers and developers.
Oh, absolutely non-negotiable.
But why does an identity security professional need to know how to code? I mean, shouldn't a mature software platform like CyberArk just have a graphical interface where you click some buttons to add an account?
It does have a graphical interface,
sure.
But you have to think about the scale of a Fortune 500 enterprise. Let's say you're the CyberArk engineer for a massive retail corporation. You aren't managing 50 servers in a closet.
Right.
You're managing 20,000 servers across multiple cloud environments,
okay.
AWS, Azure, GCP.
Oh, I see where this is going. So you might have like 50,000 service accounts, the accounts used by applications to talk to databases that all need to be onboarded into the vault.
You literally cannot do that manually.
Yeah.
If you rely on clicking buttons in a dashboard, onboarding those accounts would take a team of 10 people 3 years to finish.
And by the time you're done, the infrastructure has completely changed anyway.
Precisely. So automation isn't just a nice to have. It's the only way the job is even possible. You write scripts using PowerShell or Python, calling the CyberArk REST APIs to automatically discover new servers as they spin up in AWS, instantly provision a privileged account, and lock the credential in the vault without a human ever touching it.
That makes total sense.
That ability to code to treat infrastructure and security as code, that's the dividing line between a basic administrator and a highly sought-after engineer.
And past the engineer and developer roles, you get into the strategic layers, right? The consultants who are client-facing, translating business requirements into technical designs. And at the absolute pinnacle, the architect.
The architect is the one looking at the entire chessboard.
Yeah.
They aren't just thinking about CyberArk. They are designing the end-to-end security governance framework.
Which means the foundational skills you need to go way beyond just learning a single piece of software. The guide mentions needing a rock-solid understanding of Windows and Linux administration, networking fundamentals like firewalls and ports, and it heavily emphasizes Active Directory and LDIP.
That is a critical point. You cannot secure a system you do not fundamentally understand. Active Directory, for context, is essentially the master address book and the bouncer for a corporate Windows network. It decides who belongs and who doesn't.
And LDO.
LDIP is the protocol, basically the language you use to talk to that master address book.
Hmm.
Privileged accounts live inside Active Directory. They live on Linux servers.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't know how a Linux server processes permissions or how Active Directory structures organizational units, you're flying blind. You're trying to secure a building without understanding how the doors and locks actually work.
There's another tool mentioned in the guide that ties into this idea of understanding the endpoints. We spent a lot of time on CyberArk PAM, which protects the massive servers and the IT admins, but there is a separate module called CyberArk EPM Endpoint Privilege Manager.
EPM is a fascinating evolution in the strategy because it shifts the focus back to the standard user's workstation.
The guide says EPM removes unnecessary local admin rights from user endpoints to reduce the attack surface.
Yes.
To bring back our analogies, it sounds like you're taking the permanent admin rights away from the CEO's laptop. So if the CEO clicks a highly targeted phishing email, they can't accidentally install malware. But at the same time, you're still allowing them to run the specific approved applications they actually need to do their job without calling IT every 5 minutes.
That is the exact use case. In the industry, we call it containing the blast radius.
Containing the blast radius, I like that.
Let's walk through that scenario. The CEO clicks a malicious link, the malware executes and immediately attempts to grab local administrator rights so it can embed itself in the operating system, disable the antivirus, and start looking for a way to jump to the network.
But with EPM installed, the malware hits a brick wall.
The local admin rights simply do not exist for the malware to exploit. The attack is suffocated right there on the laptop. EPM enforces the principle of least privilege at the very edge of the network. The user has exactly enough access to do their job and not a drop more.
Because designing this intricate defense requires such a deep hybrid skill set, you know, networking, coding, systems administration, and security architecture, the compensation for these roles is moving incredibly fast. Let's look at the trajectory, because the salary bands in this 2026 India guide reflect a market that is aggressively competing for scarce talent.
Scarcity is definitely the key driver here. Finding someone who understands both the deep technical plumbing of an AWS cloud environment and the complex governance of privileged access management is incredibly rare.
So looking at the numbers and keeping in mind this is for the Indian market, a fresher with 0 to 2 years of experience is entering at roughly 4 to 7 lakhs per annum.
Which is a solid starting point.
Definitely. But the acceleration is what really caught my eye.
It scales dramatically as you prove competence.
Right. At the mid-level, 3 to 5 years, you're looking at 8 to 15 lakhs. By the senior level, 6 to 10 years, it jumps to 16 to 28 lakhs.
Yeah.
And if you reach that lid or architect level with 10 plus years, you're pulling in 28 to upwards of 45 plus lakhs per annum.
And if you combine that CyberArk architectural experience with specialized cloud security certifications in, say, Azure or GCP, you push past the top end of those bands easily.
The sheer velocity of that salary growth, the fact that it can quadruple or quintuple in 5 to 10 years, makes sense when we think about what we just discussed regarding the blast radius.
Exactly. The enterprise-ending nature of the risk dictates the premium.
If a mid-level web developer writes a bad piece of code, a feature on the company website might crash for an afternoon. It's a bad day, but the company survives.
Sure.
But if a CyberArk architect misconfigures the vault or creates a flawed automated onboarding script that exposes service accounts, the entire global bank could be compromised in hours.
The stakes are existential. Companies aren't just paying for your ability to install software. They're paying a massive premium for proven, battle-tested muscle memory. They're paying to ensure you don't make the one mistake that ends the business.
The guide also outlines a very clear certification path to validate that muscle memory. You have the CyberArk Defender for entry-level admins, the Sentry for advanced implementation, and the Guardian for expert architects.
And crucially, the guide advises not just relying on vendor certs. You need to pair those with broader industry credentials like the CISSP or Security Plus to prove you understand the overarching security landscape, not just which buttons to push in CyberArk.
Now, CyberArk is obviously the 800-pound gorilla in the specific space, but the guide does mention competitors.
It does.
You have BeyondTrust, which is a direct competitor in the PAM market, but then it brings up tools like SailPoint and Okta, which serve different functions, right? The SailPoint is focused on identity governance and compliance, making sure access policies align with regulations. And Okta is primarily focused on workforce, single sign-on, and multi-factor authentication.
Those distinctions are incredibly important for anyone planning their career path.
I was trying to map out how someone should choose between these technologies. It feels a bit like choosing a specialty in medicine. If you build a career around Okta, it's a bit like being a general practitioner.
That's a really fair comparison.
Everyone needs to log in, right? Every single employee in a 50,000-person company needs single sign-on to check their email, access Slack, or open Salesforce. It is vital, incredibly widespread work.
Oh, absolutely.
So what does this all mean? Well, choosing CyberArk is like deciding to become a neurosurgeon. The volume of patients, or in this case, privileged accounts, is much smaller. But you are operating on the absolute most critical, sensitive nerve centers of the entire system.
And the margin for error is zero. The guide actually backs up that analogy by pointing out the competitive dynamics of the job market. Because CyberArk is such a specialized, high-stakes niche, the talent pool is significantly smaller. There is actually less competition for these high-level roles compared to broader cybersecurity generalist positions. There are simply fewer neurosurgeons in the job market than general practitioners.
So for someone listening who wants to become a digital neurosurgeon, the roadmap is clear. You have to build the foundational IT knowledge first: Active Directory, Windows, Linux, networking. You have to understand the why of identity and access management before you memorize the how of the CyberArk platform.
Right. Get your hands dirty.
Exactly. Get into the sandbox labs, build that muscle memory, grab that Defender certification, and target the rapidly expanding GCCs in hubs like Bengaluru or Hyderabad.
It is a phenomenal opportunity to position yourself at the very center of enterprise security.
To bring this all together for you listening, this deep dive into the 2026 landscape shows us that protecting the keys to the kingdom offers a deeply rare mix of strong demand, high salary growth, and long-term relevance. The entire corporate world is adopting zero trust. Regulatory compliance is only getting stricter.
Much stricter.
And the threat landscape is evolving faster than ever. This isn't just a hot job for the next 2 years. It is a genuinely future-proof career path.
It absolutely is. But, you know, there's one brief mention in the source material that I think requires us to completely reevaluate what the next decade of this industry will actually look like.
Oh, what caught your attention?
The guide briefly mentions a specialized tool called CyberArk Secrets Manager. Its entire purpose is to manage credentials, SSH keys, and API tokens, specifically for DevOps, for applications, and for CI/CD pipelines.
CI/CD pipelines. For those who might not be deep into DevOps, that's essentially the highly automated assembly line where new software code is continuously tested and deployed into production, right?
Exactly. It's automation at hyperspeed. The critical detail here is that Secrets Manager is not designed for human beings.
Wait, really?
Yeah. As companies undergo massive cloud migrations, they are automating infrastructure deployment. The actual volume of human administrators manually logging into servers via the vault is shrinking. Instead, we have automated scripts spinning up 100 cloud servers, doing a task, and destroying them 5 minutes later.
So the scripts are the ones doing all the heavy lifting.
Which means the scripts need the privileged passwords. The machines need the keys to the kingdom. If the users of the future are mostly automated APIs and DevOps pipelines constantly talking to each other at the speed of light, it completely changes the threat model. Are we looking at a future where privileged access management entirely shifts away from human passwords?
Wow, that changes the entire playbook. We spend all this time building these elaborate defenses to monitor the human administrator walking into the electrical room. But if humans aren't even the ones managing the servers anymore, the single most critical vulnerability on the planet becomes the machine-to-machine secrets.
The real threat is the automated robots we built to wire the building. If an attacker compromises the CI/CD assembly line, they don't even need a password. They can just inject malicious code into the foundation of the enterprise. Securing non-human identities is going to be the next great frontier.
That is a phenomenal thought to leave on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take some time to mull over that shift. Keep exploring the hidden architectures that run our digital world. And remember, no matter how luxurious the digital hotel gets, always keep an eye on who or what is holding the master key card.